G'day everyone. I reckon this one is going to be relatively short today because I've got no blog post to talk about, but I do have some other things that I think are kind of interesting to cover. If you are watching the video today, you will see that I am more professionally attired because I have been, if you can see the shirt, I have been plural sighting. So some of you may know I've been doing a quarterly video series for Pluralsight, which has been, what are we, typically about 45 minutes to 30 minutes long. They have been in front of the paywall as well so that everyone could access them. Oh, incidentally, I've got to remember this, put it in the links. Pluralsight has got a mega deal going at the moment where you can get like a third off the cost of Pluralsight Library because of American holidays. So they take like $100 off. I'll put a link to that in my notes as well. So if you're on the fence about getting some Pluralsight stuff, now is the time to do it because it's cheap. Be that as it may. So I just did the new course, which of course will be in front of the paywall anyway. And I'm not going to tell you exactly what it is about. I think it's something that's kind of interesting that is related to the InfoSec things. But I've had to be presentable. So like all my lighting's right. I've got a shirt on. I've done my hair. It is Australia and the Gold Coast. So I'm basically like still in board shorts anyway. But the good thing about doing videos is like only the top half of you has to be presentable and the bottom half just doesn't matter. So that said, other things, a few people had pointed out that I had had something on my desk behind me, which had been in the works for a while, and it's a kind of a geeky thing with nothing to do with InfoSec, but I finally finished building that Bugatti Chiron, which was kind of cool, and I don't know, there's a little bit of anticlimax, if I'm honest, about finishing the whole thing, and it's done, because it kind of adorned the kitchen table for like months while I had time between travel to do it. But it's just it's actually weighty. Like this must be a good couple of kilo, I don't know. And it's going to sit up there along next to the other Lego things because I'm still kind of a child and I like playing with Lego. But it was good fun. And yes, that is now finished and it will go back up there on the shelf sometime. I took it off the shelf before doing the Pluralsight thing because I thought maybe that's just not quite professional enough. I don't care about this one anyway. About this video, I can do whatever I want on this one. So that, now let's get into the tech things. So I had not planned to do it this way. I thought I'd had one new tech thing. I've actually got two tech things. The first one, which I knew that I would have to talk about, is I got the new iPad Pro. Now, some people are a bit surprised actually about my iThings, and I want to give a little bit of context. So there was a time where people were like, why do you have an iPhone and not a Windows phone? They don't ask that anymore for reasons. But I had an iPhone, I think I got on board probably about Gen 3. I think we never got the first one or two gens in Australia. But, you know, like we're going back, what, 7, 8 years, something like that now. Loyal Windows mobile phone before that. So I've had iThings, my wife has had iThings, I've got the apps, I'm bought into the ecosystem, I've got all the plugs. Both the old ones and the new ones, and now the new ones because they're different again on the new iPad. I don't know what it, like if it's a cultural thing or what, but most of the people that I know here, my family, my friends have iPhones. It's really rare actually to see someone with an Android, and it's not like they're all in tech or they're all, you know, I bought them for them or anything like that. They've just ended up there. So that seems to be the ecosystem that we're in. So I've got the watch, the iPad, the phone, which I record on here. And I've had iPads probably for the last 5 or 6 years, and I use them a lot for consuming information. So if I'm ever tweeting early in the morning, I'm usually on the iPad on my old one, and I'll come back to the differences between these in a moment, sitting outside in the sun, rising sun at that time of day, catching up on the Twitters and firing off a few messages, but largely consuming information. Particularly when I travel, I spend a lot of time watching videos and so on them as well. And I went to an iPad Pro, so this is the old, I'm going to call them small and big because I can't remember the sizes. This is the old small Pro. And when I went to this, I was very, very happy because it works in bright sunlight and the non-pro ones didn't. So obviously the screen design is a little bit different, but suddenly I could see these and I was like, oh, this is awesome. And I never used like the pencil or any of that sort of stuff, never used the keyboard. I have proper laptops for doing that. But this was a great machine. And then when the new one came along, and it's like it doesn't have bezels. There's more screen real estate. And I was going to get the same size as the small old iPad Pro. And then when I realized that the larger one is now not as big as it was before physically, but still has the same screen real estate because of the way they've chopped the bezels, I was like, okay, well, that's, I could see my way around the big one. And a bunch of people have now asked me, like, what's it like using the big one? So just to sort of put it in context, if I unlock the screen, you can sort of see how there's basically, well, there's bezels, but they're not big bezels like before. They're not big, thick blocks. The packaging's actually really nice. Like the camera is very, very tiny just in here. It's a very, very slim camera. So it's a very nice design, super, super thin as well. One of the things that's really cool about it is that these covers now just use magnets, which, and magnets are always like kind of magic, right? So when you put the cover on, it's just like snap like that, and it will actually snap into place, which is kind of cool. So that's neat. Because no bezels, no button, no home button, no touch ID, it's all face ID. And I remain on the fence with face ID. I'm certainly into biometrics. I've got another post on why I don't think people should be not into biometrics. But I lamented face ID on my iPhone 10, because it really did not play nice in bright light. Incidentally, my XS is much more reliable with face ID. My wife has said the same thing. I'm sure it's not just me. So that's good. The iPad's an interesting one, because iPad with Face ID needs to be able to unlock in both landscape and portrait mode, because you hold it both ways. So there's a bit of a challenge there. I'm actually finding it very, very reliable and very, very fast. So I'm kind of happy with that. The only problem that I consistently have is that if I pick it up like this and I try to unlock it, you might just see on the corner how it's gone. It comes up and there's a little arrow. It says, basically, don't cover your camera, because a lot of the time you pick it up like this and you sort of got your hand over the camera. And if you've got your hand over the camera, it's not going to unlock with Face ID. So it's almost back to like you're holding it wrong days. You know, I remember that old comment from Jobs. Now, that said, when I look at the two of them and I sort of think about what size would I rather, I would like one that's right in between these two. That's what I would really like, because it was quite easy for me to hold the smaller one on the sides and type like this. And okay, I'm 6'5", I've got big hands, I've got room to do that. It might be harder for other people. I can't quite do it with the larger one, but then the screen's really epic and it's just nice to read on. It's a little bit like that old paradox with when I went to a plus size phone. It's like, oh, the screen's really big and cool. It's actually hard to hold it with one hand and type. And then the X came along and sort of solved all those problems. So look, it's a good device. Interesting on the bottom. For those of you listening to the audio, I'm showing a USB-C slot on the bottom. I really hope that this is like a sign of things to come with Apple and they just go, yeah, like let's use an industry standard for a connector and not these stupid freaking lightning plugs. I'm not sure if they've done this just because they need more juice. I don't know if you could have delivered enough juice via a lightning cable, or if this is now just a recognition that like USB-C is a standard and everyone else is using it for all sorts of things, they should jump on board. But this may be, if that's the case, it may be another one of these situations where I have to go through and rotate a bunch of cables, but I think this is definitely heading in the right direction. So that's device thing number one. Now, device thing number two is our washing machine. Now, bear with me here, because I did not see this coming, and I'm going to relay the tweets. I should actually, I'll link into the tweet thread, because I think it's a kind of funny thread. I had fun writing this thread, and you'll see why as I start to go through this. So I'm sitting at home yesterday, playing with my network, and I'm going to explain what I've been doing with the network, because I've got a bunch of questions about this as well. But I was creating a separate network that was VLAN off from the private one, and all of the IoT things were starting to move into there. And incidentally, the catalyst for that, I've mentioned we've got, we've had road works as well as gardening works, so we're redoing our garden. The new irrigation system they got in has got wireless, and the gardener's like, oh, you know, you'll want to connect this to your network. And I'm like, yeah, maybe. And I thought, okay, well, before I connect the like the garden to the network, I really, really need to go and do this sort of isolated network. So anyway, I'm in there with my iPhone trying to connect to a network, and I see this network pop up, and it says the first item here, the first SSID is in square braces, washer, Samsung. Washer. I'm like, why is there a washer? And the signal strength is really good, like it's close. And as I said in this tweet thread here, you may want to mute this for the next minute if you have kids in the car. I said to my wife, I said, what brand is the new washing machine? And she said, oh, it's a Samsung. Now, we had recently got one because the old one died and she had to sort of go out and get it in a rush. I think I was traveling at the time as well, so I didn't really pay any attention to it. I just got home, the new washing machine, clothes are clean, everyone's happy. So she was Samsung. And I said, why the fuck is my Samsung washing machine broadcasting an SSID? And I was genuinely curious. I wanted to know what it was doing. So I said, yeah, have you got the instructions? So she had the instructions. So I started going through the instructions, and this does what many IoT devices do, which is they broadcast a network so that you can connect, say, your mobile device to the washing machine or whatever else, and you can then use the companion app to set it up and then get the washing machine to connect to your primary network. Now, fortunately, by the time I got to do this, I actually had an isolated IoT network, so I had the perfect place for the washing machine to go. So going through these tweets, you basically go through, you hold down one of the buttons, you manage to get it broadcasting an AP, which is good. So you connect to it. Now, when you connect to it, why does it do this? The app says, press the home button on your iPhone, go to settings Wi-Fi, select the washer Samsung network, which is the one I saw broadcast before. Use a password of 11111222222. Okay then, so we do that, connect to the washing machine, and then it's got all of these controls. It's got, like, you can see the temperature of the washing machine, how many times it's rinsing it. I think it was running at the time. It's like the RPMs of the spin. Incidentally, I don't know why you need any of this, but it's just kind of cool regardless. There's laundry recipes. There's a recipe for t-shirts, a recipe for a blouse, a recipe for a sweater. So I assume the washing machine just works differently depending on which one you choose. What are you washing? Is it white or colored or dark? Is it heavy? Is it light? Is it cotton? The best cycle for your laundry. It actually recommends the cycle based on the thing. Now, there's a part of me which is like, this is cool, and there's a part of me which is like, this is pointless. I think the value proposition, if I'm honest, is that the UX of a washing machine is not great. I certainly can't figure out how to use the bloody things. That may be because I'm just not very good at some of those domestic kind of things as well. That's possibly my own shortcoming. But look, let's face it. Like, it's just a bunch of buttons on a white facade. It's not particularly beautiful to use. If you have an app, you can actually do some cool stuff. I mentioned to my wife, I think I deleted the image now, but I said to her after I connected all, I said, you know, did you know that the drum, I don't know what the word was, the drum needs spinning or rotating or something? And she's like, no, I didn't know that. Well, app told me that there's maintenance required on the washing machine. So there you go. That's what it does. I don't know that there's a lot of value to it. A bunch of people popped up later on and said apparently Samsung is just connecting all their things because that's what you do now. Mine is sitting on a dedicated IoT network, though, which brings me to the next thing, because I had a bunch of people asking, how do you create a dedicated IoT network? Glad you asked. So I'm going to walk you through this. Now, this depends on your networking gear of choice. So as many people know, I am running Ubiquiti things all over the place. I've got way too many access points for a normal residence. But, you know, hey, this is what I do. So I'll talk you through how to set this up. It's pretty easy. What you got to do is you got to go through and you create a new wireless network. So I created a wireless network that was just the same as my normal one, and then I put the word IoT on the end of it. Of course, it then has its own password. All that's fine. And what I did then is I went and created another VLAN. So I have got an IoT VLAN. Now, this IoT VLAN runs on a different subnet. I'm running this on 192.168.2.1 or 2.1 and then all the things off the end of it. And what I'm doing then is saying the IoT Wi-Fi network needs to use the IoT VLAN. So as soon as any device connects to that Wi-Fi network, they're now on the IoT VLAN. Now, all you've got now is just devices on two different subnets. But what you can do then is I can go into routing and firewall, and I can go into the firewall setting here, and I can go to the LAN in section, and I can create a firewall rule. And what I do with my firewall rule is I created a rule called block IoT to private. And what I can do then is say this rule gets basically run before any of the other predefined rules. The action is it should drop. So effectively, this is going to be a blocking rule. It applies to anything or any protocol on IPv4, so TCP, UDP, etc., etc. And then you go down, and this is sort of the important thing. Actually, in advance, you can check the state. So do you want to block new connections? What about established connections? Possibly not, because you do want to be able to communicate backwards and forwards. Once something on my normal network, such as my phone with the app, reaches out into the IoT network and starts talking. The key bit here is you can specify a source and a destination for the firewall rule. So I went in and just chose my source network as the IoT one and my destination as the home one. In other words, anything on the IoT network, if it tries to make a connection to something on my home network, it gets blocked. Going the other way is okay. So my home network can connect to my IoT network and it's fine. This is beautiful. It works lovely, 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 lovely fashion. And just to test it, I opened up a network tool on my iPhone. I opened up one of the ping apps. Before applying the firewall rule, I could ping devices which were on my primary network. As soon as the firewall went in, can't see them at all. Couldn't ping it, couldn't connect to the NAS over HTTP. Seems to work just beautifully. The one caveat, and I need to figure out how to fix this now, is that the devices on my IoT network can't see the pie hole. So if you remember, I wrote about pie hole last month, which is effectively DNS resolution with a blacklist so that you can block trackers and ad networks and nasty things like that. Now, unfortunately, at the moment, my washing machine, I can't believe I'm saying this, my washing machine is not getting the benefit of anti-tracking technology that black holes DNS queries. Plus, I would really, really like to see which host names my washing machine is trying to query at the moment. So this is my job for today. I've got to do that because I want to see what the washing machine and the sprinklers, once I connect those guys shortly, are trying to do. Now, the other cool thing is, because once you're on Ubiquiti, you get a whole bunch of other inspection stuff. And I haven't looked at this again until today, so you might see me sort of shocked here. You know what I'm shocked about? The washing machine has dropped off the network. Why is the washing machine not on the network? Maybe once it turns off, it drops. That's a bit of a shame. Well, I know, it's a problem. Wow, how did we end up here? It's not a shame because I really don't want my freaking washing machine sitting there perpetually on the network if I'm not actually doing anything with it. And also, a washing machine is a class of IoT device where, frankly, if you're not present, you really can't do much with it. Not until there's a robot somewhere that can like pick the clothes up and put them in the machine. At the moment, the robot is one of us. So, what I did find, and I tweeted this out yesterday, is, and I'll share this tweet thread in the references here. Once I connected it to my Ubiquiti network, it appeared there that the vendor, interestingly enough, is WISOL, W-I-S-O-L. Not sure why that is. Does it get that from the first couple of octets of the MAC address? Don't know. My washing machine was connected to my access point called entertainment room. So it's our laundry is near where we have the TV. It was on the SSID, which is the IoT one. My washing machine had a receive rate of 72.2 megabits a second, which is that good for a washing machine? I don't know. How many packets down? How many packets up? DPI, so deep packet inspection, which I have turned on my Ubiquiti network. It can tell you where it's talking to. So for example, there was about 4K worth of data went to Akamai. It's a CDN. Other fairly small amounts of data going backwards and forwards over HTTP. What else we got here? The total amount of data was only in the kilobytes. It was 77.7 kilobytes. So I'm interested to now look at my washing machine, turn it back on and see if it's actually transferred any more data. What a world we live in, right? So anyway, the moral of the story there, I think more than anything, is that it is a great idea to have an isolated IoT network. And just to be clear, I want to make sure that if one of these devices goes like Mirai style rogue, then okay, maybe it's going to be part of a botnet. It still has external internet access and it might be trying to blitz people off the planet, but at least it can't talk to other things in my network. So my PCs and my phones and my NAS and important stuff like that is well and truly isolated from the IoT network being able to see in. Right, so that is connected washing machines and all. See, this is probably stuff you didn't expect to hear today. It's stuff that 24 hours ago I didn't expect to be talking about today. Now, last thing that I want to talk about here is a new data breach from today, and I'm just bringing up the website because these ones in particular are starting to really, really frustrate me. And they're data breaches of data aggregators. Now, I do want to write about this, but I can't write about it for a little bit longer because there's a bunch of others in the pipeline. Let's define data aggregator first. There are services out there that make their money from selling your data and my data. Now, these are services that operate legally. I'm pretty sure everyone I've seen has been in the US. This is not a very European thing to do, to have everybody's data without their consent. And we've seen many incidents going to Have I Been Pwned before. Some of them very, very mainstream. Dun & Bradstreet. Dun & Bradstreet had a service called NetProspects, leaked a whole bunch of data a while ago. And in fact, I'm going to make sure that we have numbers and figures that I can talk to here so that actually makes sense. When was NetProspects? Who has been pwned? We're over there. And NetProspects was 2016, a list of over 33 million individuals. So there's a good one there. Well, a good example there. There's nothing very, very good about what they did. Apollo. So Apollo was sent via security researcher Vinny Troyer. He got in touch with me and he had 126 million records there from Apollo. A sales engagement startup. There was Exactus not so long ago as well. Exactus was a similar thing, 131 million records there, also from Vinny. The one I loaded today is a company called Adapt. Now, you may have never heard of Adapt before, but chances are they've heard of you. I've had multiple tweets already from people that have had data breach notifications, and they've said, I've got no idea who this company is. When you go to adapt.io, the first thing you see there is the headline. Fresh quality contacts, contact data that adapts, access over 37 million contacts. Now, fortunately, there was only about 9.3 million contacts in this set of data that I was sent by security researcher Bob, with the last name I have trouble pronouncing, but many people know Bob. And Bob has sent me a bit of data in the past, and there's a number of things that we're working on to try and get through disclosures on before we put into Have I Been Pwned as well. But when you look at the Adapt website, exact targeting, advanced filters and confidence, scores build powerful prospecting lists, quality records, no bounce. It looks like a legitimate website, but the words just don't feel like that, do they? There's a video in there that shows that they've got some sort of, it's like a little browser toolbar, and they show you as you're sort of browsing around LinkedIn. And you're on LinkedIn and it's just pulling all of this other information about the individual because it's sort of taking the LinkedIn profiles, going to the Adapt database and then pulling all the data back. And they put it in a MongoDB, left it publicly facing without a password. So that's now in Have I Been Pwned. And as I said, there are multiple other incidents that are coming that I still need to process and publish. And I just lament the fact that this is happening so often. And these other incidents are totally different companies as well. And I don't understand the legal basis for which these organizations are allowed to run and collect our data in this fashion. I was in the Apollo incident. I was in there because I was a customer of New Relic, and New Relic used their services, and now my data's out there. I'm sure there are shades of grey in terms of the legitimacy of some of these organisations, but it just frustrates me no end that our data gets used in this way without any, you know, like, even just put all the GDPR stuff and everything aside for a moment. As a reasonable human being, I think it'd be fair if I got to know how my information is being used, whether I'm a European or an Aussie or a Chinese person or whatever else. I think that would be fair, and I'm pissed at the fact that this data just consistently gets used without my consent in ways that I never expected. Now, the other frustrating thing, since I said the G word, is that when people have then tried to exercise their rights for things like subject access requests, they very often haven't gotten very far. Now, the Apollo incident was actually a good example of that, and I got a draft blog post with some of the feedback that people got when they tried to make SARs, subject access requests, to Apollo. And there's some poor Apollo support person here who basically had to keep relaying the same message over and over again. So, for example, they've said, "Thank you for your inquiry." Someone screen kept this for me. "Thank you for your inquiry. As a data processor, we obtain and process your data at the written instruction of our customer. Accordingly, we cannot acknowledge your request." And the request was, "You lost my data. Tell me what data you had on me," which I think is a reasonable request. And frankly, I couldn't care less where you got it from. The point is, you now have it and you're responsible for it and you lost it. So do the right thing. Same thing in a reply to someone else here. Another reply here says, "Thank you for your inquiry. We have voluntarily deleted your data, which consists of first name, last name, email address, title, company from our database." Still not telling you why they had it in the first place. This tweet, I think their reply sort of got a little bit chopped off here, says, "We collect information from publicly available resources and also are provided data from customers in connection with," and then it kind of chops, oh no, here we go, "in connection with services that we provide to those customers." So publicly available resources, a lot of this is LinkedIn scraping. So a lot of this data we've seen come from LinkedIn. We have seen incidents like the GeekedIn data breach before, which was scraping of GitHub and then selling that. Or actually, I think in that case, they're trying to use that to like create a tech recruitment service, but scraping people's data, including mine again, off GitHub with and just using it outside of the way we expected it to be used. Now, here's the bit that sort of really frustrated me, because I think, as much as I want everyone, regardless of where you are in the world, to sort of have an equal level of rights over their information, I love the fact that we have a regulation here now in terms of GDPR, which we hope has a bit of teeth. But the problem we're having here as well is that it doesn't seem to do that when the companies are outside the EU. And I know extraterritoriality and so on and so forth. And all of this is in a draft blog post about the things that we're learning about GDPR now that it's actually been out there for, I think we're just about to tick over 6 months. So, for example, someone raised the Apollo incident with a Belgian regulator. And with their permission, I've reproduced, or will reproduce in this blog post, the response from the Belgian regulator. Belgian regulator says, "It is not directly clear in which country Apollo is headquartered and if there is an office in Europe. In the latter case, then the privacy authority of that country is the lead in the story. In this case, it seems like the company is based in the United States, San Francisco. That would limit a process from Europe severely. The purpose of a breach is, in the first place, you change your password so the accompanying account can no longer be accessed with the old one," which is kind of pointless because there are no passwords in it all. But this is a, like, this is now a regulator enforcing GDPR saying, and I'll use their words exactly here. These are translated from Dutch, but their words were that it would limit a process from Europe severely. And this is unfortunately what we're seeing. Well, I lament it a little bit because there are cases where I think organizations operating in other jurisdictions in the world need to be able to do their own thing. And then we can choose whether we want to use them or not. But this is really frustrating. And the person that sent it to me then left a comment here where he says, "So even under GDPR, companies like Apollo still have freedom to do whatever with our personal information as they please." And it sucks on the one hand that, yes, he's probably right based on what we're seeing. And it also sucks on the other hand that we even need to have something like GDPR in the first place to try and stop this crap from happening. Yeah, I am not a European data subject, but I would like my data to be treated with a little bit more respect than what it is at present. So anyway, there's a little bit of my sort of high horse thing on data and aggregators. As the next round of releases comes out, and I'm just doing the numbers in my head, I think we have got a nine-figure number of records in total, so I think 100 million plus, that still need to be loaded into Have I Been Pwned with subsequent incidents. As we get through those and I see the way people are reacting and I see the way the organizations are reacting, I want to finish this blog post. And I don't know that it's going to have good conclusions, but I do want to highlight the prevalence with which these organizations are collecting our data in ways that we never expected and then just leaving an open face in the world. It sucks. I hope to have some degree of influence or at least a voice about what I think should change. All right, all that said, last thing is Tech Fabric is sponsoring my blog this week. So we've had Tech Fabric around there for a few different sponsorship slots so far. They're building scalable, reliable, and secure cloud-native applications. So big thanks to Tech Fabric for their support over the course of 2018, which we are almost at the end of now as well. So that's it for now. I have got the next 2 weeks, two weekly updates from home, and then I'm going to be overseas again, and I'm going to talk more about what I'm doing as I get a little bit closer to the event. But it's going to involve a lot of time with my family, which is a nice thing to do that time of year, any time of year. Thank you very much for watching. I know there are no blog posts this week, but I hope those other discussions, particularly around the freaking connected washing machine, were interesting. I shall see you next week.